from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning. You have made it to Friday. Congratulations and happy Valentine's Day. G. Scott has taken some well-deserved time off today. Felix Bonnell is co-hosting this morning. Good morning, Felix.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yes. Coming up, should your kids be compelled to be kind to their bullies? This also has to do with the Valentine's Day as well. Colleen O'Brien is going to join us. We're going to talk about that. And what can be done about bullying in schools? And then later in the hour, we're going to have our scenario segment, which is always a favorite. But now let's get to our weekly Ask Me Anything segment and what is really going on in the criminal justice system.
Our new segment called Ask Me Anything is an opportunity to reach out to the listeners and find out from the awesome jobs that are out there. And last week we had on 911 dispatchers, and this week we asked for bounty hunters. Now, I was educated, Ursula. They told me, hey, it's not that. It's bail recovery agents. I learned that as well. So we brought in some experts. We have Courtney Weimer and Mike Rocha from All City Bail Bonds. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
No problem at all.
Really appreciate it. Now, Mike, you run the Everett one, and Courtney, you run the Tacoma branch as well right there. What does a bail enforcement officer do?
Well, I think that there's a lot of avenues that we take. If somebody posts a bond, they have an obligation to return to their court dates. And if they do not, first thing we try to do is resolve the situation. We call the defendant, we call their family members that are involved in the bond, and we try to resolve it. We try to get them back into court, get them new court dates. There's times where I have attended warrant quash hearings with people and said, hey, they've communicated with us, it's great. And then there's times where people are not communicating with us, and obviously we have to take a different approach and go knock on doors, which is honestly the last thing that we want to do. We would always like to resolve it peacefully, but when we have to go knock on doors, we do, and get family involved and get friends involved, and there's times where we've taken people to jail, and now mom and dad is involved and has a lot better understanding.
So many of us have watched Bounty Hunter, the show, mm-hmm. and you get the idea that that's what it's like. How much of your job is like that? What, you know, give us a scenario that you have faced as a bail enforcement recovery person, and that would be, hey, yeah, that's similar to the show.
Well, I mean, the realism of the show is that, yes, they do go out in the field, and yes, they put handcuffs on people. A lot of what I had heard about that show, and I don't know the inside of the show, but what I understand is that they had arrangements with the criminal defendants to say, hey, we're going to go ahead and come pick you up. We'll help you re-bail out. It's kind of a scripted event. I don't know that to be true, but that's what I've heard some of the producers say. So when we go out, you know, we're going to go out and knock on these doors. And if somebody is in a position where they're at home and they're going to do what they, you know, originally intended to do, then we might leave them there and not bother with them, or, you know, just kind of watch to make sure that they do get rescheduled with the court. If not, you know, we arrest them. And it's our responsibility to safely transport them and book them into the jail that they were originally out of.
Mike, this feels like the first time when I found out that WWF or WWE wasn't real. Man!
I'm so sorry.
that is the voice of Courtney Weimer and Mike Rocha from All City Bail Bonds. All right. What do you guys see from inside? What do you guys see from inside the criminal justice system that maybe we don't know?
Well, I think that we see a little bit of everything. I really get a unique perspective between dealing with judges, attorneys, prosecutors at times, their family and friends, and the defendant themselves. I believe as bail agents get probably one of the most unique perspectives in the industry.
So we're often talking these days about prolific offenders, people coming in and out of the justice mm-hmm. system, yes. in and out of jail. You've been in the business, both of you have been in the business for a long time. Mm-hmm. What have you seen, and you said that you also worked in Seattle, but now you're out in Tacoma. What have you seen just in recent years about that revolving door?
Well, that's exactly right, is revolving door. You know, I've I've ran through the streets of downtown Seattle with parents looking for children that got out and were, because they were supposed to go to treatment and we're supposed to meet them at the Union Gospel Mission or whatever it might be. It is a revolving door. And right now the requirements that they're having for people to post bail is a lot less significant. I mean, back when I first started, you couldn't have 12 felonies and 37 warrants and still get released. And right now I see that on the daily.
Do the criminals know that?
Is that right?
Do they know that, yeah, like, hey, I'm going to be out in about 5 minutes. I'm good.
They do. I mean, at felony arraignments, I see some of these guys' friends sitting in the courtroom that are laughing, actively laughing, because they know that their person's getting out. And when they do, they laugh again. And it's fairly interesting and a bit embarrassing to watch.
One of the beautiful things about the bail system is they may get out through bail relatively quick, but once they're engaged in our system, we're going to make sure that they see the case through. So they're going to go to court. They're going to answer for their crime. So it's not a revolving door where they come in, go out, and never come back again. We're going to make sure they show back up.
This has got to be, at moments, a dangerous job for you two. When did you feel most afraid while on the job?
I mean, when you go into a house and you know that the person you're looking for has a firearms violation or a weapons charge, then you know darn good and well that there's going to be an issue with that individual. So you take precautions, and we're well trained, and we know how to go into a house properly, and we know how to take somebody down. So, but you never know what's on the other side of the door. You don't know if it's that person's day to make his last stand. And that's what's a little bit, you know, frustrating or scary is that you're not sure what their state of mind is.
Well, and some of my most interesting encounters have actually been with those small time, in and out, very small crime people. I have had more dangerous encounters with the theft three, the low drug paraphernalia, the even sometimes driving without a license. It's interesting because I think there's a misconception, on my opinion, that some of the, you know, these big bonds and some of these big crimes, I mean, they're horrible, but a lot of those guys, either the collateral is so significant, they don't want grandma to be on the hook for their crime, or we check on them with weekly checks, or there's ankle monitors that we can do as well. But a lot of these guys, it's a lot more serious of a situation. So, I mean, I know that some of the smaller stuff actually makes me a little bit more anxious than a $200,000 bond.
I'm trying to understand what would make someone want to go into the business that you are in. What attracted you to this?
I started by doing the recovery work. You know, as a kid, you don't think, oh gosh, I want to be a bail bondsman. It's not that type of a profession. Mm-hmm. But there's some allure about it. And then when you get exposure to it, you start to realize how much good you do for society. You know, this innocent until proven guilty thing is actually real. And we help ensure that that process maintains its place in the criminal justice system. So there's so much good stuff that people don't see that we do it on a day-to-day basis. You know, we refer people to drug programs, to housing programs, to social services that they might not know where to turn to go. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a realtor, we're a social service person, we're a policeman. We wear a lot of hats in this industry, and it's very gratifying at the end of the day.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of it, too, is law enforcement has so much pressure with serving warrants. I mean, there's just hundreds of warrants that are issued daily in the state. And to try to take some of that pressure off of police, you know, law enforcement, the taxpayer, whatever it might be, Mike and I have gone to, I mean, Florida, California, Montana. I mean, we've gone everywhere and gotten people where those people might not have been brought back. And that's huge. That's huge for victims. That's huge for the criminal justice system altogether.
Is there one case in particular that will always stand out to you that you think, man, this is just encapsulates what it is that I do and it sticks with you forever?
Yeah, we did. We've done a couple of pretty big ones recently. One was one down in Lewis County, and it was a $250,000. And we spent a lot of time talking to his neighbors in the community, because he had kind of a family name. And, I mean, he was just terrorizing.
A complete menace to society.
And just terrorizing his neighbors. I mean, old women that were trying to walk down the street with their dog. He'd try to run him off the road with his car and crazy things. And so, and we went through great lengths to try to find him. And we did.
And what's the response when you find him?
From them or from us?
No, from them.
He drove, crashed his car, got out, ran, fought. Yeah. You know, it's just.
I'm the one that chased him down in the
woods. She tased him in the woods.
Oh, yeah. I did.
Yeah. Oh.
I did. No,
she's
chased him down.
She plays hardball.
How about that moment for each of you in your career? The one moment where you thought, oh boy, I might not be going home. You ever had that moment?
You know, that is the moment that, of course, we all fear. And I know that my fiance fears, his wife fears. And I think a lot of law enforcement fears, because it is real and we have a right to go home every single day. But you also have to ask yourself, is it worth it? Is any amount of money worth it? We are very well trained, especially, I mean, we do a lot of training together. But there's always that question, mm-hmm. you know, is this worth it?
Yeah, people pull guns. People point them at you. They want to shoot you. And you know, the ability to reason is a big deal. You know,
huge.
What are you 95%. Equipped with, by the way? If you're dealing with us, what are you equipped with?
We have tasers. We have sidearms. If somebody is real bad, we'll carry a long rifle, you know, an M4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And we are fully trained. We have, I think that's a common misconception of how much training we go through. And we're also both board members of the Washington State Bail Association, which we highly regulate ourselves to make sure that all of that training occurs.
I want to talk about the growing movement to end cash bails, mm-hmm. which, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of poor people that kind of get stuck into that rut and everything.
100%.
What do you guys think about that?
I don't think that bail is not meant for the mother that is trying to steal diapers for her 3-year-old. That's not what we're here for.
We believe there should be some bail reform.
100%.
You know, somebody driving on a suspended license, give the guy a citation. You know, let him go to work. Don't detain him. Don't hold him. It's the person who is a habitual offender who just snubs his nose at the system, and he has 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 of those, and he's not going to court. So eventually a judge imposes bail to ensure he's going to show up. Mm-hmm. So you can look at different states that have eliminated the cash bail system, New York being one of them, just recently, the start of this year. And the police, judges, prosecutors are screaming bloody murder because people are walking out the door. And when they walk out the door, they don't come back. There was a habitual bank robber who got arrested just after the first of the year, was released, robbed a bank the next day. There's no accountability. That's one of the real problems with that. Judges are recognizing this nationwide, and they are adjusting bail, and that's okay by us. We're fine with there being some reform in the industry. The problem that we have with things like the Arnold tool and pretrial release is that their mindset is to let everybody go, mm-hmm. unless it's a capital offense, and that's not right, because you have people who that's where your revolving door comes in. Officers begin to fail to do their job because they know if they arrest somebody on a property crime, they're going to get booked in and released. So then society starts to have this ripple effect in a negative way, where why are officers out there doing their job? Why are they working so hard? Why are they risking their lives? You know, why would they bother stopping somebody after they smash your car window? They could just stand there, as they do in Seattle, you know, shoot heroin right in front of a police officer, because there's no consequence. You know, the officers sign up to go do the job, and their hands are tied, especially in a politically correct area like this. So I believe the commercial bail, once again, is the highest rate of return on planet Earth. So I don't think it should be eliminated. It might need to be modified, where low-level offenders are cited until the court system recognizes them as somebody who is not going to take care of their business unless they have some oversight.
Well, and I think that the pretrial release program is being overutilized a little bit and taken advantage of, because, you know, as I sit there and track in Pierce County last week, there was a gentleman that got picked up on a robbery charge, and was released, and the next day got picked up on a kidnapping, possession of stolen vehicle, and a drug charge, and got released again by the same judge, but this time to electric home monitoring, which, as you, I mean, I see people violate that daily. And so at what point do you consider, you know, for pretrial release, they're not supposed to be releasing violent crimes. And this is his third violent felony in the last 8 months and two in 2 days. And so at what point is it being
abused?
Yeah, absolutely. When is enough enough for society where we have to say, come on, guys, we want you to do your job, police officers. We want you, judges, prosecutors, to actually have some teeth in the law. Right now, in a lot of states and in Western Washington, you see people that they don't care. They know they're not going to be held accountable. So why bother trying to change their life or try to go get a job?
You said they were outright laughing at the, I'm going to be out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've seen several reports now that show Seattle has a repeat offender problem, especially in the downtown core. The same criminals are committing more crimes and they keep getting put back out on the streets. Are you seeing similar things in Pierce County or up in Everett?
So from somebody that used to work in Seattle for many years at this office, the city as a whole is, I've always looked at Tacoma like redheaded stepchild, and turns out I love Tacoma. We just bought a house down there. And I will tell you, coming back into Seattle anymore, I don't like to do it. Just the city itself, as far as I don't want to walk downtown anymore. What I see driving in, the amount of garbage, and even the smell outside of our office. There is everything about it that is different.
The Seattle City Council dictates a lot of what happens down here. And you of course see those same issues around, you know, any major jail, but in Seattle the policies are different. It seems like they restrict the police. They allow people from around the country to come here and use social services programs.
There's nobody in fear of walking around the Pierce County Courthouse. I will tell you that nobody. It's not even remotely the same.
Mm. Really appreciate you two coming in. I'm glad to meet you here on the show. Glad not to meet you outside of here.
Cool. Nice to meet you guys.
I'll give you a pass.
All right. That's Courtney Weimer and Mike Rocha. They are from All City Bail Bonds, and I really appreciate them coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for hanging out with us on the G and Ursula Show. G is taking a couple of days off. Felix Bunnell is co-piloting with me today.
Roger
Felix,
that.
We've been talking about Valentine's Day, and you said that you had plans maybe for this weekend, right?
Yeah, just some sort of a day trip or overnight or something simple. But every day is Valentine's Day in my family.
And it should be. You know. Now, today, Colleen O'Brien, our managing editor, was handing out Rice Krispie treats to everyone in the newsroom. It was very sweet.
If you haven't gotten one yet, one's coming your way.
And Rachel Bell, she put a sweet Valentine's card on my desk, the kind that you used to get in grade school.
I don't have a desk. I didn't get one of those.
Uh-oh.
I'm left out of that.
Well, it did bring up the discussion of whether kids should be forced to give Valentines to everyone, and we wanted to bring Colleen in to join our discussion. I'm a person nature thing.
You can go. You can ignore. Ooh,
welcome,
is this my
Colleen.
Theme song?
Yes.
Do I get a theme song?
This is your debut on the G and Ursula Show.
You know what's funny?
What?
Sometimes I put this song on my way into work to get myself pumped up for the day.
Is that right? That's awesome.
I do.
Perfect.
I do. I've got my girl power song. Yeah, I'm a boss.
Peeling back the curtain a little bit.
Literally.
Here on Cairo Radio.
No, that's great. So, Colleen, you have a grade school child.
Yes, 6 years old.
Yeah, so did she bring in Valentine's for everybody? How'd that go?
Well, that's required, and it has been ever since she's been in a daycare situation or even in kindergarten. Is the teacher sends home a list of all the kids of, you know, here's everybody who needs a Valentine. And the same goes with birthdays, as I found out, which I think is fair, that if you're going to put out birthday invitations in the classroom, everybody gets an invitation. Now, there's a way to do it behind the scenes if you just want it to be an all-girls party or all-boys party. But yeah, everybody gets a Valentine. And this was the first year that gave me pause because she's been having an issue with another student. You know, it's started with a little bit of harassment, sort of, you know, touching and poking and prodding. She's told me about this one incident. This child cut in front of her in line, and she said, "Hey, you can't cut in front of me." And so what the child did was grab a pencil and made a stabbing motion at her.
Oh.
Like, don't tell me what to do or I'm going to. Oh, so she told me about that. She's in tears. I said, okay, I'll talk about it. And the school responded great, you know, got the counselor involved and there's a safety plan and all of that. But it continues, you know, it's not great, but she knows, you know, be assertive, tell an adult, this is what you can do. And then the list comes home and I go, why would I make my daughter give a love note to a child who threatened to stab her?
Ooh. So, but did you have me? You have to follow the rules, all right? So you did it or not?
She did, but okay. She wanted to do it. And that's when Wednesday night, she told me on the way home from ballet, she said, "Mom, maybe I'll give so-and-so two so that they'll be nice to me."
Nice. Oh, you know what? And that's where your sweet daughter.
Yes.
And she is just
she wants to be friends with everybody.
Yes.
Doesn't understand when people are mean. You know, she wants to, and she want the people who are most mean to her, she works the hardest for them to become her friend.
Ugh.
And so I've had to redirect. And so that's when I had to go, okay, you need to listen to me. It is not your job to make this person nice to you.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be a nice person on their own. And when they are, and it's consistent, then you can think about being friends with them. But that's, I worry that that's what this precedent is setting up, that everybody gets a Valentine, especially in situations where serious harassment has occurred. And I don't want to set her up for later in life as, you know, with her first boyfriend or girlfriend, I don't know, you know, that I'm going to change this person. They're not the perfect partner for me, but I'm going to change them. That's not your responsibility.
Which is so great that you had that conversation already at a young age, just saying, mm-hmm. You don't need to make this. Not everyone's going to like you, and you don't need to try so hard. You don't need to be anything other than yourself, and you need to protect yourself, which is great.
And that the way they're treating you is not okay.
That's not okay. So as far as the Valentines, though, can you just not bring any?
I suppose you could.
Yeah.
But, you know, but when kids get wrapped up in the, you know, she wants to participate and she wants to be a part of it. And it's not as complicated to her as it is to me. I'm trying to set a good example. I want to plant a seed so that when one day it does become serious, when she's a teenager and there may be, you know, violence involved or anything like that, that she remembers mom telling her it's important how it's not your job to change them.
Yeah, because it's so, I mean, there's so little control you have as a parent over the kids your kid runs into at school.
Oh.
Because especially if your kid, which your kid sounds like, is earnest and sincere.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation with my daughter before. She's an adult now. But I feel like earnest, sincere kids, it might be the toughest to be a little kid. But in your later adult life, that's going to be a more rewarding and fulfilling life. So these sort of struggles that your daughter's having now with a bully and her desire to be earnest and sincere and maybe they'll like me if I give them a Valentine.
Yes.
That's like, it's tough now. But I think long term, that's the kind of daughter you want. So, I mean, I think you've done a good job raising her. I think that conversation you had the other day, what a great teachable moment, because there's so much the kids are expected to know when they show up at school that most parents don't have the time or don't have the wisdom or whatever, or just don't, it doesn't happen for kids. And those are the ones who cause a lot of the problems, in my experience.
Sure.
This also brought up another discussion, and it was eye-opening for me this morning. At 6 in the morning, I find out that two people I work with used to be bullies.
Yeah. I was a bully in elementary school. I was in a gifted child program. I guess they call it highly capable now.
Oh.
This was the very first year for a full-time gifted child program over in the Lake Washington School District. So I was in fourth grade, and they took me and 23 other kids, picked at random from about 100 eligible kids, and we were in this little classroom in Mark Twain School over in Kirkland, and it was like 24, not all malcontents, but there were kids like me who sort of, we were too clever for our own good, didn't know what to do with our energy and our interest. And I was younger than most kids because I started kindergarten at age 4.
Oh, my.
And so I was trying to impress these older kids.
Like Dory.
Yeah. No, Dory wasn't in my class. No.
Starting young.
That would be a revelation. Yes. No, but there was older kids who were sort of, because it was a fourth and fifth grade class, and the fifth graders, there were these kids I wanted to impress. And I found one way to impress them was to make them laugh. And one way to do that was by targeting kids who were able to be targeted. They had some sort of weakness or something. And I did terrible things. I said things I regret and made kids later in that. I was in that program for 3 years. I think in the third year, there were kids who left the school right after the year started because we bullied them so much. And I say
how
we,
did
but
you change? Because you had to decide to stop being a bully.
You know, and not to blame my, I mean, I think the context for me is I'm the youngest of nine kids. And a couple of my older siblings were pretty mean to me when I was a little kid. And so it's when I got to school, I finally had kids my own size that I could pick on.
Well, the way you're treated is often how you treat others.
Yeah, but I've learned. Yeah. And I mean, yeah. Years of therapy.
sure.
And,
hey,
and therapy is helpful
it.
Talking about it. But I feel guilty about some of these kids that I targeted and I was part of this bullying. And it's just, it's the teachers, they tried to get involved too, but they couldn't stop us.
In the case of my two boys, my oldest son couldn't have a bigger heart. I mean, he is so compassionate and he is such an empath and he feels for other people.
I wonder where he gets it.
Yeah. I know. We've talked about that. My younger son, though, I mean, he's got a good heart as well. But there were times, and he would never be the active bully. Mm-hmm. But we would have to have conversations about, hey, if you see someone doing something wrong mm-hmm. or, you know, is making someone feel terrible or you see someone being bullied and you're standing by or you are at least the audience for that. Because he said, "Oh, I would never, I would never interact."
We talk about that with sexism, racism, all of it.
Right?
You need allies to come in and help out.
I would try to tell
people with power that need to stop the behavior.
Exactly.
So, in the case of the school, the principal, the teacher, the parents need to get involved. And I had somebody reach out and say, "I think when kids act that way, you know, the stabbing motion and the harassment, it's a cry for help."
Yeah.
That's not my daughter's responsibility to help him, though. Right?
No.
Like her giving him two Valentines instead of one is not going to turn his life around. Parental involvement and adult, that's what's going to do it. That's not the burden my daughter bears.
Yeah. And I totally agree. I also would say, though, that if it were, hey, don't give this kid a Valentine, that would also, and I know that's not what you said, but
it was,
it's like
to ostracize
the kid because of this bad behavior
at
that young age would be.
Yeah, it was don't give it to him expecting that he's to suddenly be nice. The expectation of I'm going to gift this to you. I'm going to give of myself and my time to make you feel. No.
Yeah, no.
No, 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 no.
Well, the other former bully
is our producer.
This surprises me less because Andrew's kind of a spitfire.
I'll tell you, you don't mess with Andrew.
Felix, you're a little softer. I'm surprised you were.
I've learned. It's as you get older, you learn and you get wisdom. So I'm grateful for being smarter than I was 45 years ago.
Andrew, what do you want to confess?
Well, I mean, I was much the same way as Felix. Like, I was also in a gifted program, and it was, like you said, kind of a classroom of oddities.
Yeah.
Myself amongst them, of course. Yep. And I was that kid that would pick on some of the other kids in the class. And that was kind of a behavior that extended all the way through high school. And that did also, like Felix, come from an experience with older boys. And I think it becomes this perpetuating cycle. Like when I was in kindergarten, my brother was in first grade, we'd ride share with older kids. And it was a daily experience of, you know, being harassed, of name calling, etc. And the point where it stopped for me, and I think it culturally stopped, was in high school. I went into a wrestling program that had a very kind of brutal hazing tradition. Mm. And there was no adult oversight at the beginning of the practice every day.
Wow.
And that continued from my freshman year all the way to my senior year. At which time there were actually consequences. A kid and his parent went to the school and said, hey, this is something that's going on every day. And I remember feeling like almost like angry, like, why are they stopping this? Like, I had to go through this.
Mm.
Why? Like, how come these kids get it better than I had it? And it just totally shifted my brain. Like, after I got over that anger, I was like, why wouldn't everyone want to have it that way? Mm-hmm. But it, like you said, it does take someone at the top intervening to make a culture shift.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Interesting discussion. I'm sure there's a lot more that we could discuss about this.
I'm really sorry. I'm still really sorry. There's people I need to reach out to and apologize to someday. That's what I'll do.
I'm only laughing because I was truly shocked. I just couldn't believe the two of you. Coming up next, it's scenarios time. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Felix Bunnell is in. Coming up next hour, is it time for you to get a divorce? A sleep divorce, anyway. That is going to be a very awkward conversation. But right now, it is time for scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
And today's scenario. Dear G and Ursula, my husband and I are having a disagreement about our kids. They are 33, 27 and 23. All of them are on their own, and they all have good jobs. But they're still on our family cell phone plan, and we still pay for it, and it makes me crazy. Every time that I try to get it changed, my husband just shrugs and says, it's cheaper to keep them on this plan. It's no big deal. And it's not a big deal. We can't afford it. But why should we keep paying their expenses? They're big kids. When do they get out on their own? When do you cut off your kids and shouldn't be thinking about taking care of us?
Well, I mean, they're not living in the basement, right?
No. So they got that going.
I would guess. My theory on this would be that it sounds like this is a woman who says her husband doesn't want to cut him off the plan, right?
Well, he just says it's not a big deal. They can afford it. It is cheaper to keep them on the plan.
Yeah. See, I think for me, being a parent is such a huge part of my identity. And my daughter's an adult now, and she's off to college. And so this is a way, I think, of sort of keeping the child, keeping sort of some sort of control or some sort of connection, or like you're doing something nice for them constantly. Seeing that bill every month, oh, look, we're still paying the phones for Junior.
Okay,
how
wait,
nice
no,
that
no.
makes. Maybe not in their head, they're not thinking, oh, I feel more like a parent now because I'm paying this. But it's sort of this way to kind of not let go, which isn't, maybe it's not the healthiest thing, big picture, but for a phone thing, what harm is it, right?
At 33, though?
Well, they never stop
at
being...
At what point
they never
do
stop
you cut
your,
them off?
They never stop being your offspring.
True. But how about at 30? I would be embarrassed at that point. How about at 33 or 27?
33
I mean, 23.
Funny.
I have a 23-year-old.
Okay.
And in fact, he actually is paying his own thing. But I can see where you're 23, you're still launching. You know, you can still get a discount. At 33, maybe you have your own family. At that point, presumably you've been out of the house maybe for a decade. I would do this. If it really is so much cheaper, you know, if they want to keep that family plan and it benefits the parents as well, how about the older ones contribute their portion?
So you charge them. So you become like a subcontractor.
Just say, you know what, we'll get the cheaper deal.
But think of what a nice warm feeling that must be every month. If you're 33 and you know you're using your cell phone and you think, I don't have to pay for this. Mom and Dad are still paying for this and I'm 33. I mean, don't parents, even of like old adult children, still like to do nice things for their kids consistently as a way of feeling that kind of that familial bond?
Wait a minute.
Either that or control.
I mean,
financial control.
No, that's part of it. It's mixed together. It's intermingled, I think.
At 33, though, at that point, and I don't want to get so hung up on an age, but I just would think at some point you do need to cut off the umbilical cord.
I got to jump in on this. So, first of all, I understand why she's concerned.
Yeah.
That being said, just be grateful. Just be grateful. This is not a big deal. One, your kids are all financially independent. You're not supporting them. You're just paying like $50 to $80 a month for their cell phone plan. Two, you can afford it. It's not a big deal to your family. And there are so many other people who are in that age bracket who are not only taking care of their adult kids in some financial way or having them live in the house with them, but they are also supporting their parents at the same time. And sometimes also responsible for daycare for grandchildren.
Right.
So I think that that like your generation, Ursula, my parents' generation, they're taking care of a lot of people right now
in ways that
their parents did not have to do.
True.
And so I think in this situation, it's a small deal. Just let it go.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, again, that sweet. I wish my parents were still around to buy stuff like that for me. That'd be great. My parents are both long deceased, and I never. They don't pay for anything anymore.
I mean, at this point, honestly, for many years, it's been me helping my parents. I mean,
it flips over at some point.
It does flip over.
Oh, you know what they got to do?
What's that?
Just don't worry about the cell phone bill. You kids, you host Thanksgiving. You cook and you clean up.
We're paying
for your cell phone bill all year round.
Good point.
He's like a fair trade.
Just hold it over him like an emotional hook, you know?
I love it.
What about
it?
Car payments? Insurance?
It's a constant negotiation. Okay, coming up next hour, we told you we're going to talk about sleep divorces. You're listening to the G and Ursula Show.
Happy Valentine's Day.